the corner of his eyes through the polythene sheet. Artyom saw Svinolub slap a machine gunner on the shoulder and then run up the steps to the balcony and away out of the station. He had to get back to work, deal with important business. It wasn't permissible for him to be killed. He left, and it all started without him.
"Let us go!"
the crowd told the machine gunners. Letyaga dragged Artyom against the people's movement, farther away from the barriers, farther away from the gun barrels, pulling away with all his bearish strength. But the current dragged them back, to impale them on the barbed wire, and the bullets that were almost ripe.
"Fire!"
A machine gun thundered, fanning the humming bursts out and mowed down the first row. Mowed it down with Artyom's bullets.
"Have mercy!"
someone squealed.
"Lord, have mercy! Have mercy on us, Lord!"
groaned someone else, a woman.
"We'll die here! Have mercy!" "Up there! Go up! Onto the surface! You don't have to die! Go up to freedom!"
Artyom shouted to them, but he was drowned in the call that had spread instantly, like electricity.
"Have mercy!"
And with that lamentation, all the thousands upon thousands advanced against the barriers, against the machine gun.
"Have mercy, Lord!"
They hadn't been taught how, so each of them spoke those three words to their own music. The sinister chorus was weird and unearthly. They tried to tug their trapped arms up to cross themselves, but they couldn't get them out from down there. And they moved forward with no arms, stepping on those who had been mown down, not learning anything from them.
"Have mercy!"
Leocha howled, clutching at his own Christ. Those at the front fell, and the second row became soft shields for the third. Artyom, Letyaga, Leocha, and Saveli wanted to go back, away from the machine guns, but the crowd wanted to go forward anyway, because it couldn't see anything for itself there behind. Artyom was armless himself, and there was absolutely no way he could stop the crowd now. The automatic rifles up above began howling down onto the heads, and people started going limp here and there, but in the crush they couldn't fall any more, and remained standing on their feet, even after they had died. No one here was afraid of death. Maybe they even wanted to be slaughtered in order to do something at last with lives that they were sick and tired of, and be at peace. They simply chanted, "Have mercy," and carried on walking towards the stairway that led upwards, as they understood, up, and towards the bullets. While the magazine of the machine gun was being changed, mere seconds, 100 hands grabbed the barrier and dismembered it. A moment later they had gouged out the machine gunner's eyes, torn the commanding officer of the detail to pieces, and strangled all the others. And then they started creeping upwards, the living and the dead together, like lava out of a volcano. They didn't even take the drowned men's weapons. They had no time for that. The gunman flew down from the stairway in the balustrade in silent consent. Artyom was walking back towards the tunnel, towards the hatchway, but even so he went up the stairs to the balconies with everyone else. He was carried towards the connecting passage to Hansa. The Red Army men, over whom the people hadn't flooded yet, started retreating, already begging the crowd for forgiveness, but they shouted too quietly, so they were killed anyway. Saveli slipped away and sank, and he never surfaced again. And hundreds out of those thousands, or perhaps even thousands of those thousands, also disappeared. Someone tugged on Artyom's sleeve. He looked back and saw a woman, gaunt, with bluish-gray skin.
"Young man! Young man, I can't do it! They'll crush my son!"
she shouted to him.
"They'll crush him! Hold him! Lift him up! They'll crush him! I can't do it!"
He looked down and saw a boy about 6 years old, with light blonde hair and a smear of bloody snot under his nose. And he managed to jerk the boy up to himself just in time.
"Okay, where do I take him? Who are you? What's your name?"
"Kolya."
"And mine's Artyom."
At first, Kolya put his arms round Artyom's neck so that he wouldn't slip off. But he was being crushed. He managed to change his grip and scramble up onto Artyom's neck. Kolya's mother took hold of his hand. She held it for a while, then let go. Artyom twitched fretfully. Where was she? She was standing there, caught in the vice grip of the crowd. She couldn't fall, but her head was dangling down, shot through.
"That way, that way,"
little Kolya shouted from Artyom's shoulders. He hadn't noticed yet that his mother had been killed. Letyaga walked at the front, massive and indomitable. Artyom and Kolya followed him. Lyoka had latched onto his crucifix and was clinging to it like the broken mast of a ship, praying with the only three words he knew as he sculled along. Somehow they managed to stick together, and they were swept along like that as far as the Hansa border.
"Mama! Mama! Where are you?"
the little boy called, remembering about her. But there wasn't anyone now where he had left her. All the Reds had been swept aside and trampled to death. Flags appeared out of the darkness of the passages. A brown circle on a white ground.
"Up!" Artyom pleaded with the people. "Not this way, go up!"
"Mama! Ma!"
The boy tried to climb down and jump into the grindstones to drag his mama out himself. But Artyom caught him. He would have been trampled down in a second. The thought came to Artyom that he couldn't abandon this boy now. He had to take him as his own. Take him and keep him for as long as his own life lasted. But how could he raise him? Suddenly he pictured himself back with Anya, and they had this kid he was clutching by the ankle, and they all lived together. In Polis, at exhibition. He suddenly wanted to go there into that life to take a look, just for a minute. The searchlights above the fortifications lit up and tried to blind the people, but even blinded, the people knew which way to go.
"Mushrooms! This is the state border,"
someone shouted to them.
"The Federation of Stations, of the Circle Line, will open fire and shoot to kill. Have mercy!"
And that was all. They had all survived in vain back there on the steps. Artyom took the boy down off his shoulders and into his arms, so that the bullets wouldn't pick him off above all the heads. The boy tried to break free, and Artyom thought, "Damn, what a responsibility. Now I have to drag him around with me everywhere." But Sukhoi, how had Sukhoi taken Artyom? Just taken him and dragged him around all his life, exactly like that. Someone he had picked up by chance. He was able to do it. But what about Artyom? Could he do it? Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, the guns chattered. The ones at the front, the bravest, came crashing down. The ones behind them, desperate people, fell, but others kept jostling from behind. The third row, the fourth row, the 100th, the 200th. Artyom turned his back to the front to shield Kolya.
"Mama,"
said Kolya. "Hush," Artyom told him. They walked past a dead man in a black balaclava who had lost his way. It was frightening to take responsibility for someone else, especially a six-year-old. To bind yourself to him for the rest of your life. How did you do that? Kolya relaxed and stopped struggling. Artyom looked down, and the boy was dead, with his arms hanging loose and his legs dangling, with his light blonde head thrown back, and little holes in his chest. He'd been caught by falling bullets at the end of their flight, and he had shielded Artyom.
"You cowardly bastard," Artyom told himself. "You stinking coward. You shit."
He wiped away the snot and looked for a place to put the boy down, but there wasn't anywhere. And then the three of them were tossed towards the reinforcements and the Hansa machine guns. They were exactly the same kind of machine guns, no different at all from the Reds, and the bullets were probably the same. And they killed in exactly the same way. The muzzle was turning towards them, spitting death, but Letyaga remembered about his sniper's rifle and stopped the machine gunner halfway, and a second later, the emplacement was swept away by the wave, and the body was dragged across the stone slabs. Artyom held Kolya in his arms for as long as he could, but he lost him anyway. Absolutely everything was smothered in people. The dead stared indifferently and kept silent. The others couldn't do that. Those who went on roared. Those the bullets were flying towards mumbled about mercy. The dying finished up their conversations with God. No one was listening to anyone else. But suddenly, they started taking hold of each other's hands, to walk in a chain and not get split up. Artyom's hand was taken on one side, then on the other. People he didn't know. Warm, ardent hands. They didn't hold on for long. When they'd taken a few steps, the little man on the left let go. Then the man on the right. They were already walking over the crumpling faces of Hansa border guards, and the vanguard of the starving was already bowling through the barbed wire. They had already reached the Circle Line Komsomol station when the flamethrowers jumped out behind them, like fiends from hell. Artyom and Latyaga and other people were swept out into a huge stately hall, a ceiling covered with happy mosaics, chandeliers giving undeserved light, caressing and divine, well-washed little people screeching and recoiling from the invasion, and the defectors, the intruders, like rats, like cockroaches, hurrying and scurrying to get out of this palace and out of sight, into the tunnels, into the burrows, to scatter before they were all caught. Behind them in the passages, the flamethrowers started roaring. The first people who were burned howled, and a smell of roasted flesh and burnt hair spread through the air. But Artyom and Latyaga and Leocha ran, with their arms round each other, into the blackness of a tunnel, without looking back to see what they had left behind them. Someone shouted in the tunnel behind them, ordering them to stop. Hansa security guards who had rushed to the scene were already arresting people and dragging them back home to the Red Line. These fugitives weren't wanted here. The three of them didn't talk to each other. There wasn't enough air for talking. Before the exit to Kursk station, there happened to be a connecting passage between tunnels, and after wounding the guards, they managed to get out through it onto another line, the Arbat Pokrovsk Blue Line. Latyaga remembered about a ventilation shaft there. They scrambled out among the courtyards of dilapidated detached brick houses, between the flaking gold of church domes and the flaking gold above smashed shop windows. They sat down to take a breather, deafened by all the shouting and screaming. Latyaga didn't say anything. Leocha batted his eyelids in confusion. Artyom puked. They had a smoke.
"How do you feel about it now?"
Artyom asked Latyaga.
"Got the idea?"
Latyaga shrugged his bearish shoulders.
"They killed the kid. I was holding him."
"I saw."
"He killed them with our cartridges," Artyom told him. "Svinolup, that scumbag. The major. With your cartridges. He must have run out of his own. They were waiting for us and he just left. Alive. All those corpses were left back there, but he's alive. And he'll go on living."
"I was following orders."
"He was following orders too. It's pretty certain he didn't think it all up himself. All of them there were following orders."
"Why the hell are you comparing me with him?"
"It would be great if we could kill someone too,"
said Leocha.
"The one who did think all this up, that fucking twat. So there'd be no more orders like this."
"I was sure he'd croaked. I put two bullets into him. I should have shot him in the forehead."
Artyom's left arm had gone numb, and his shoulder was soaking wet, but he wasn't allowed to think about his shoulder right now.
"What's the point of taking out the major?"
Leocha objected.
"There were shitloads of majors. Take out a major and you only make a captain happy. You have to take out the field marshal straight off."
"What if I had finished him back there? What would have changed? They would have charged the machine guns anyway, I told them. They don't understand anything. I told them they could leave that place, go up on top. They don't hear anything, none of them, even the ones who are going to croak any moment. It's easier for them to storm a machine gun than go up there. What can you do?"
Letyaga snorted bloody snot into his hand and started absent-mindedly wiping it on his trousers. He rubbed his forehead.
Fuck them. You can't change their direction. They're like a herd of animals. Where can I go? He asked. This is desertion. There isn't anywhere to go.
Artyom looked at him for a moment. The fireproof man. He didn't burn because there was nothing there to burn. If only Artyom could be like that. His ears were gradually uncorking themselves. His stretched eardrums were shrinking back. And then from down below, out of the crevices, sewer manholes and drainage gratings, through the ventilation system, from all sides, sounds started welling up from under the ground, weeping and howling, weak, muffled by the heavy Moscow clay, reflected off numerous bends in fractured pipes. An echo. The people couldn't escape. Only their voices could. It was like a birth. Moscow was like a woman who had already died, but the children in her petrifying womb were still alive. And they wanted to be born, and they were crying there inside. But Moscow didn't let anyone else out. She pressed her concrete cunt shut and squeezed all her children to death, and after their torment they fell silent, and were never born. And their smokes ran out. It was night. Moscow had been dunked into this night as if it was a bucket of dirty water, to wash all the blood off it. When the murky night ended, there would be a murky day, and on that day no one would find out what had happened on the day before. Everything would be washed out in the night. Who would find out about the black tunnel where some people had flailed at others with pickaxes? No one. Who would find out about the jammers? No one. Who would find out about the atheists crossing themselves as they charged the machine guns? And what they all died for. What the reason was. Lityaga. Lityaga. Do these enemies exist? The West? America? Are they real? Do they exist at all? Tell me honestly. Lityaga squinted at him, but in the darkness it seemed as if his eyes had evened out and were looking straight and true. They must.
What the fuck do we need enemies for?
Lyocha asked.
We get along just fine without them.
If they wanted to, they'd zap us anyway just to make sure. The coup de grâce. If they were seriously afraid of us. Have you ever thought about that?
No.
And all the other cities? Petersburg, Vladivostok, and all the small fry, why don't they bomb them? Have you thought about that? Or have they taken them all, and we're the last ones left unconquered?
No.
What's it to you if I've thought about it or not?
The point is that there aren't any enemies. They couldn't give a shit about us, Lityaga. The enemies. Nobody needs us. You bought that story and so did I. We're always thinking that someone needs us real bad, that we're the center of the universe, that we're the last ones or the only ones, or the most important ones, that the fate of the world is being decided right here, like fuck, nothing's being decided here. We build empires here and storm machine guns, croak on construction sites, feed ourselves to the dogs, save the human race. And it's all under a lid. Our entire struggle, the sacrifices and the heroism, it's nothing but the heroism of ants in an anthill. No one can hear them. We croak for nothing. Take away that lid.
Shield. It's a shield, not a lid.
Take away that shield, and nothing will change. I'm certain of it. Our enemies don't need us, Lityaga. We need our enemies.
I'm certain, Lityaga said painfully and fiercely. I'm certain the old man is telling the truth.
Then he's a stupid fuck,
Artyom replied just as fiercely.
He's a stupid fuck, and you've been head-fucked. And I'm a stupid fuck, too, for swallowing that story back at Balashika.
And now it's too late. There's nothing else I can do. That was the moment. We should have smashed all those jammers to hell, flattened them all, and then seen what happened. Right, Savelli?
Right,
Leocha replied for the trampled Savelli.
It wouldn't have achieved anything, Letyaga spat out. There are lots of those jammers planted all around Moscow, and people wouldn't have believed you anyway. Because you've all been head-fucking them for 20 years. How can they believe it? It's not their fault, is it? I never head-fucked anyone.
Uh-huh. You call everyone who doesn't fit into your story.
That's with enemies. I'm defending the homeland against enemies. And if I hadn't yanked you out of Balashika, you bullshitter, the Hansa troops would have put you in the ground right there, before you even knew what hit you. It wasn't you who yanked me out. It was the old man, and not because he felt sorry for me, but in order to save his shitty equipment, that's all. He told you to whack me, think about it. Who am I to him? His son-in-law. His daughter's husband. But he still sentenced me to death. But I didn't whack you. Well, thanks a fucking bunch. You're welcome. And what reason is there to kill me? Because I know about the jammers? Because I know how they mess with people's heads, or what? If I happen to object when he gives the Reds cartridges, 20,000 cartridges, 20,000? You were treated to a good helping yourself today. It's time to stop being such a dumb fuck.
So at least the war will stop. That was Moskvin's condition.
So that's what the old man meant when he said at any price. He said it would have to be paid. Just 20, right?
So were we supposed to get more of our boys pulverized? Arrange another bunker?
Artyom turned away.
Was that Moskvin there?
I recognized him. Moskvin and the other one was Besolov.
Who is Besolov in Hansa?
Some kind of big shot. I can't fucking tell them apart.
You're lying,
said Artyom, sure of himself.
You know. Who is he?
Bagarov.
He passed on the envelope for the Führer through our old man. And the cartridges for the General Secretary, he did it, and the old man reports to him, doesn't he? Eh? To Alexei Felixovich, how come? How did he get such a grip on him? With those shitty jeeps?
So? Hansa picked us up off our knees. When was it you cleared off? After the bunker? You took your Anechka and ran out on us like liquid shit. And what could we do? How many of us were left after the bunker? Maybe half? And all full of holes. If not for Hansa, we'd have fallen to pieces and that would have been the end of it. The old man did what he could. No one else was willing to help. But what could he do with no legs and one arm? Hang himself? And were we supposed to turn into mercenaries?
Being a mercenary is more honest than being in your order now.
You fuck off, all right?
Do you at least understand what he paid for those off-roaders? And the sniper rifles? And the little caps? Our boys. It was Hansa who set us up, Letyaga. We asked them to come. When we were in the bunker, we called them, but did they come? Some great help landing us with their wankers instead of our boys, who were killed because of them. He sold them. And he sold them to Hansa.
That's not possible. There must be a reason.
And what was the reason for bumping me off?
What if you were a spy? Or a saboteur. You tried to break the shield. What if you were playing against us? And you wormed your way back in. He said, if you tried to disrupt the peace agreement, or put the delivery in danger, then...
Who's spy? Who's saboteur?
America's. You got in touch with them from your high-rise and...
And what? I helped them target missiles again? At my own people? At my wife and my father-in-law? At you, you jerk? You were sold, I was sold, all our boys were sold, and our souls too, as a job lot, that's what happened. Got that?
They sacrificed themselves, that's all. And the Reds. It has to be done. It's hard, but it's necessary. Now's the time to join forces, Artyom, if only with the Reds. There's a different enemy, a genuine enemy. It's hard to forget the boys.
I know.
The old man can't forget them himself. You saw how he drinks with them every day.
He doesn't drink with them, he just boozes. He boozes because he used to be a hero and he turned into a roly-poly toy. No fucking arms, no legs. And if he really thinks the war with the West isn't over, it isn't over, Letyaga roared. How come you can't see that?
Does he have any proof?
This Besolov? How did he prove to you that the war is still going on? You've been brainwashed. How did he get such a tight grip on your balls?
You're the one who's been brainwashed. They're always there, creeping out of every crack. They want to wipe us off the face of the earth.
Bastard!
Artyom skipped up onto his sound leg.
You can't prove a thing. You can't prove a thing to anyone.
And what have you proved to me? If there aren't any enemies, then what's the point?
What's the point?
Yes.
I don't know.
Then get off my back.
Artyom thought for a moment. He nodded and started hobbling away.
Where are you going?
Letyaga shouted after him.
You're right,
Artyom replied to himself without looking back.
You're right. There has to be a point. It's just that we don't understand it yet. And your old man doesn't understand it. And Svinolov pretty certainly doesn't understand it. A good job there's someone to ask.
Wait, Artyom, Artyom!
Letyaga caught up with Artyom at Lubyanka Square and handed him his own gas mask.
Take it. I don't need it to get there.
Artyom didn't argue. He spat in the mask's eyes and put it on. He droned to Letyaga.
Thanks. There's no way can I croak ahead of time now.
He dragged himself lamely downhill from Lubyanka, past the Bolshoi Theatre, with its coach and four that had plunged over the cliff, past the tearless fountains, past the hotels for guests from the next world, past the dog streets, the mute parliament and the Kremlin pretending to be dead, with its extinguished stars and walls to keep out no one. Somewhere here. He stopped. It was dark. How had he done it? Where had he been standing? Blood was oozing out of Artyom's twice-shot shoulder, as if he had no end of it inside him. And he was beginning to feel bad without it, weak. But he kept on searching, and trying to remember. He shuffled in one direction for a while, then in the other. The feeble moon wasn't much use. It couldn't see black on black, and it didn't give Artyom any help. He went down on all fours and crawled, fumbling at the rough asphalt with his hands. He fished out a shoe once, and another time a door handle that had been dropped in the middle of the roadway. Leocha and Letyaga walked up.
What are you looking for?
The answer,
Artyom joked, and laughed hoarsely into his own rubber ears. And then it turned up. It winked to Artyom in the moonlight from a slight parting in the curtains of cloud. Lying there on the greyish-black asphalt was a greyish-black revolver. Svinolup's execution nagant. Artyom picked it up. A heavy, blunt, baleful weapon. Exactly what Artyom needed right now. What he had come here for. It turned out that nothing in this business could be understood without it. This blued, finished gun was the very one he needed to stick down Besolov's throat. He could breathe through it for a while, and explain to Artyom why people had to stay in the metro.
Is that all?
Leocha asked him.
No, there's more.
Artyom looked at him.
Now we go to a brothel.
Chapter 19. What to write. He was carried to Trubnaya station. Letyaga carried him piggyback style. He carried him over the surface since he was afraid to go down into the metro. Artyom was already coughing up rust-brown phlegm. While he was swinging his legs on Letyaga's back, he kept trying to persuade them to let him walk on his own. But as soon as he stood on his feet, he fell to his knees. The mechanism was running down. The key in his back had almost stopped turning. But when they arrived at Svetnoy Boulevard, some spring in his chest clicked and decided to carry on whirring for a while. Artyom waved away the red fog in front of his eyes and straightened up. He sensed that he wouldn't have time to do much. He had to do just one thing, but an important one. He fumbled for the handle of the Nagant. Like that, the Nagant agreed.
Talk to me, Sasha. Do you hear, Lyoha? Remember where?
Ah, you want a beautiful death. Want to snuff it on a chick? Nah. First, let's go patch up the holes.
Oh, sure. If it was just the holes.
Something strange was going on at Svetnoy Station. It was jam-packed with fascist fugitives. Lost, pitiful, battered. The fascists' railway uniforms had gotten soaked, and now they were drying out, shrinking and getting too small for them, as if they had been made for children's games or theatricals. But grown-ups had pulled them on and started doing everything in earnest. Their faces were scratched and smeared with mud. Their steel-tipped low boots had dried out and cracked.
"What's this? What happened?"
Lyoha asked some whores he knew.
"The Reich got flooded out. Pushkin collapsed. The Tajiks made the extension crooked. It collapsed. And then the stations next door, it all flooded."
"The Tajiks' crooked work," Artyom said with a crooked smile. "It's all the Tajiks' fault. What bad bastards."
"Everybody scattered. From Tver they went to Mayakovsky. And the people from Chekhov came here."
"And what about the war?"
"We don't know. Nobody knows anything."
You had it coming, thought Artyom. Maybe the Lord really does listen and takes complaints. Someone, maybe that woman in the barrow, managed to snitch to God before her head was smashed in with the reinforcement bar. The Lord counted up the sinners and the righteous in the Reich on his abacus of bone, and decreed that the Reich should be closed and sealed. But why did he ever open those premises? And what about Homer?
"Do you know if an old man escaped from Chekhov Station?"
Artyom asked, pestering the railway workers.
"Homer?"
They shrank away from him. They took him to the woman doctor. Among the bites from the barbed wire, she found a bleeding sore that the radiation had made in his skin like an awl. "Not long left," she said. "An urgent transfusion was needed, but the doctor for social diseases didn't have anything to transfuse or anything to do it with." She winkled out the bullet, cursing Artyom, poured fermented garbage into the holes, covered his back with a crumpled rag so that his flogged skin could ooze into that, and she gave him some painkillers long past their sell-by date. That improved things a bit. So that was where Sevelli had gotten them from.
"Now what do we do?" asked Letyaga. "We have to find you a decent doctor. Not this Count Ivanovna here. I'll squirt some red stuff back into you. With interest." "Nah, I'm going to the whores,"
Artyom said the moment his wounds felt the soothing breath of the painkillers.
"We'll settle up later."
"And me?"
Lyoha winked.
"I need a transfusion too." "If I was you, Tyomich, I think I'd pray instead."
Letyaga shook his head.
"Let's do this without the soppy stuff," Artyom replied. "Here, take some bullets."
Artyom took them.
"Will you go and hand yourself in?"
He glanced into Letyaga's crooked eyes.
"Nah, the old man doesn't forgive deserters." "What if you hand me in?"
"Then your Anka will scorn me to death," Letyaga told him. "I'm not sure which is worse. Okay, I've got a little darling of my own here, down that way. If you get knackered, come over."
"Shall I show you the way?"
Lyoha asked.
"No need, I've remembered."
He really had remembered. They parted. As Artyom hobbled away, hiding in the crowd, he looked round again. Had they really parted? He didn't want to ask anyone for help with this important job. Svetnoy Station was swarming with riffraff. Which of them here was an agent for the Reds, for the Order, or for Hansa? They were listening, searching for him.
They had to be searching.
His right hand was in his pocket. He didn't loosen his grip on the revolver. But Sasha's place was empty. There was no one inside, and the little door was locked. He suddenly felt worried. What if Besalov had taken her away, or what if something even worse had happened to her? Diagonally opposite, there was a dismal little tavern with a few seats squeezed into it. Partitioned off with straw rain from ceiling to floor, Artyom could position himself here so that he could see Sasha's establishment through the jets of straw, but no one walking by could recognize him immediately. Artyom looked at the closed door. He wanted to think about Sasha, but he kept thinking about Anya. Well, well, Vladivostok. Why hadn't she mentioned Vladivostok before? It might have been easier for him to live with her if he'd known about Vladivostok. Beside him, two wet fascists were huddled together, muttering. They kept glancing round at Artyom suspiciously. He strained hard, trying to feel hate for them, but just couldn't. He was completely burnt out after Komsomol Station. To reassure them, he ordered some vodka to go with the painkillers. He couldn't even look at food. The very thought of it set his head spinning.
Dietmar.
He caught the rustle of that name through the deliberately mangled words. He hesitated, then made up his mind.
Do you know Dietmar? He asked the pair. Who are you?
There was a man working for him. Ilya Stepanovich. He was supposed to write a book, and he had another man with him, called himself Homer, a comrade of mine.
Who are you? I asked.
I carried out an assignment for Dietmar,
Artyom confessed in a whisper.
A teatralnaya.
An agent?
The fascist moved and sat right up close.
Saboteur. Dietmar died heroically.
I'm aware of that.
All his network has moved over to me, the man declared. You'll be working for me now. I'm Dietrich.
That made Artyom want to laugh. He used to observe Dietrich from somewhere above the clouds. From up there a lot of things could seem funny, but not everything.
Listen, man.
Artyom wiped his lips with the back of his hand and showed Dietrich the watery blood.
Let me die in peace.
Radiation sickness?
Dietrich got the picture and moved away.
You're that stalker, are you? The one he recruited?
Under the table, Artyom cautiously pulled the revolver closer, so that the firing hammer wouldn't snag on his pocket.
Did you know Homer?
Weren't you killed back there at Teatralnaya?
As you can see.
Apparently, Dietmar had allocated him to the living space without any superfluous consultation.
All right. If you're one of our veterans,
don't yell.
There are ears all around here.
They're here. They got out. They're drinking nearby, both of them. They're in my charge, too. Shall I show you the way?
Please do.
Homer was alive. Glory be. He had to find him. Can you wait a little bit, Sasha? Artyom had a week or thereabouts left, and Homer wasn't going anywhere. He needed to make his confession to Homer at least for his notebook. He could write it all down for himself, about the pylons, about the pits, about the mushrooms, and about the cartridges. Let him write down everything about the goddamned whorish order, and the most important thing, the most sacred thing, that the world was still there. He wanted a story, and here was a real story. The old man turned out to be sitting only 20 meters away. He and Ilya Stepanovich were drinking morosely without clinking glasses. But when he saw Artyom, he lit up. Homer was disheveled. The fine grey hairs round his bald patch were sticking out, and in the lamplight they looked like a golden halo. He'd recovered. He was holding a chicken. The same one, Oleshka's. No one had wrung its neck. No one had stuck it in the soup. It had even fattened up well on fascist feed, and it was sleek and glossy, the little pest. Artyom walked up the steps to the old man and embraced him. How long was it since they'd seen each other? A year?
You're alive.
And you're alive.
How are you, Grandad?
How am I? Well, now,
Ilya and I started working.
Homer looked at Artyom's guide.
Hello.
And how's it going? Artyom asked Ilya Stepanovich.
Good,
Ilya Stepanovich replied to Dietrich.
We're writing. It's going well.
That's great, said Artyom. Come on, Granddad. Why don't we take a stroll? Thank you, Genosse. He nodded to Dietrich. I won't forget it. Dietrich ought to have followed Artyom, of course, to eavesdrop. But behind the straw rain, the mushrooms were getting cold and the rot gut was getting warm. And there didn't seem to be any Reich anymore.
Don't set foot outside the station, Dietrich commanded strictly, until further instructions. They shuffled through the little rooms. Women like beads threaded on the corridor. How could they find a more secluded corner here? The writing's going okay? Artyom asked Homer in the meantime.
Not so great.
What's up?
Ilya's wife hanged herself. Narina. He's drinking.
When? When did it happen?
Well, we worked for a couple of days, and... But the Führer insisted. He came himself every day, read it, and asked questions. I had to work for both of us, basically. But then Ilya has promised to make me a co-author. My name on the cover and all the rest of it. Flattering, eh?
Oh. Artyom looked at Homer. And what's he like, the Führer?
Well, just himself. In everyday life. Ordinary.
Ordinary, said Artyom. Well, well, a most ordinary man, and no doubt he's some kind of Vasily Petrovich, too.
Yevgeny Petrovich,
Homer corrected him.
Almost right, Artyom chuckled.
Have you got to the freaks yet, in the textbook?
We didn't have time,
Homer answered, looking past him.
And now who knows if we ever will. Everyone scattered. The Reich's finished.
The Führer's disappeared.
The chicken spread its wings as if for flight. But Homer, already familiar with chicken habits, held it away from him at arm's length. It huddled up and crapped on the floor.
Is she laying at least? Artyom inquired.
No. She's on strike.
The old man smiled mirthlessly.
Although I stuffed her full of eggshells. Damned if I know what's wrong.
They walked on, talking, past battered fascists and inspired whores, through other people's oohs and ahs, under the whistling of the horsewhip, conforming to the rhythm of other people's depraved love.
Well then, you won't have to stifle your conscience,
Artyom said, feeling the urge rising through his weariness.
Tell the whole story. Now you can write your own book, like you wanted to. My own book that no one will print.
That depends on what you write in it.
And what will I write?
Artyom got the feeling that someone was tailing them. He looked back once, then again. The man seemed to have dissolved in the haze. Maybe he wasn't following Artyom, but just going about his own jolly business. Or maybe he dropped back to avoid catching anyone's eye. One hand on the Nagant.
Did you find your Sasha? Artyom asked Homer.
My Sasha? No. You?
She's here, Granddad. She was here yesterday. I talked to her about you.
Do you know? Do you know where she is?
Yes.
Is she all right? Where are we going? Shall we go to her rather than... And what does she do here?
What do women do here, Granddad? She works.
Nah, come on, Sasha. I don't believe it.
Well, now...
It's not true.
And tell me, about Hunter, is that true? That he became a hopeless drunk? I wasn't aware that you knew each other.
Hunter? You know him too? Where from?
He was the one who sent me on my crusade, back then, against the Dark Ones to get the missiles. Didn't I tell you about it? And didn't he tell you? Was that the reason he drank, because of the Dark Ones? Or what was it?
Hunter? I don't know, we didn't talk much. Not enough.
You were writing that book about him, weren't you? Your own story in the notebook, so how come?
I don't know. You know, he's not a genuine hero. I wanted to make him into a hero so that people would read it and be inspired.
So that's why you made him a teetotaler?
How do you...
I told you. Sasha told me all this. Don't you believe me, then?
I have to see her, to take a look. I want to make certain.
A bit later. Be patient. It's important. Ah, seems like there's no one here. Come in. Wait, I'll just check everything.
And that about Hunter? Yes. Well, who would want to read about an alcoholic? To follow him, do you understand, it has to be a myth. Beautiful. People are sitting in the dark, in doom and gloom. They need light. Without light, they'll degenerate completely.
I understand. And now you listen. Artyom leaned down to the old man and whispered feverishly into his hairy ear.
People are sitting in the dark because the light is being hidden from them. The West wasn't annihilated, Granddad, and not all of Russia was. There are other survivors. Almost the whole world survived. I don't know what kind of life they have out there, but Vladivostok, your polar dawns, Paris, America.
What?
They're hiding them all from us, using jammers. They're spaced out around Moscow. Radio stations that suppress the signals from other cities.
What?
It's Hansa. And my order knows about it. It serves Hansa, and it bumps off everyone who reaches here from the outside. Finds them, and terminates them. And everyone who tries to contact the outside world from here, too. That's why no one even knows. And I think the Red Line built wind towers for Hansa. There are wind generators standing out there, in Balashika, to supply the jammers with power. And a ditch dug with an excavator, a huge, great pit crammed with corpses. And dogs eat them. Dogs with five legs. The builders and the outsiders all together. And Hansa gives the Reds cartridges for that. Or maybe not for that, maybe just to support them. 20,000 cartridges, can you imagine that? And Reds are firing those cartridges at the mushroom riots, firing into the crowd. People even walk straight at the machine guns, asking for mushrooms, and they mow them down. Just mow them down. The people don't want to know anything. You tell them. You can get away from here. Out of the metro, there's life out there. Up on the surface, leave this place. And they still keep plodding on towards Hansa, walking into the bullets. That's why it's important for you to write all this down in the notebook. Yes, and another thing. They lie to everyone and claim that we have to be hidden in here because there are enemies all around us. They say the war's still going on, but it's all lies. I'm certain it's all lies. But what it's all for, I'll find that out. If I get out of here. But meanwhile, you write it. All right? Write so the people will know. It's important.
Homer took his ear away and looked at Artyom intently, as if he had to demine a tripwire. And compassionately, too. But he tried to hide the compassion because he realized the fishing line was invisible, and his compassion could snag it.
How are you?
He asked.
You look terrible, to tell the truth.
It's all up with me, said Artyom. There's maybe a week left. So you're right, Granddad. Write it down.
Write what down?
Everything I just told you. Homer nodded.
All right.
It is all clear. Shall I tell you again? Artyom half rose on his good leg and glanced out into the passage.
Not everything's clear.
What isn't? Homer hesitated.
Well, it all sounds a bit strange, to tell the truth.
Artyom drew back and looked the old man over from a distance. Do you think... Don't you believe me? Do you think I flipped out, too?
I didn't say that.
Listen, I realize it all sounds crazy, but it's true, do you understand? And vice versa, everything you know about the Metro...
that there isn't any life on the surface, that we have nowhere to go, that the Reds are against Hansa, that Hansa are the good guys and all the rest of it, absolutely all of it, that's all lies. We've just been living with them for so long.
One city could still... maybe two...
Homer frowned and made an effort to force himself to believe Artyom.
But the whole world? And jammers? And Hansa?
Never mind that. You just remember it for the time being. You can write it down later. You will write it down for yourself, won't you?
I'll be gone soon, Granddad. I don't want all this to just disappear. This is a mission for you, understand? I found out really crazy stuff, and if you don't put all this in your notebook, no one will ever even find out. Today, I'm going to... never mind. I might not pull it off, but you, do you understand, can make a difference. Will you do it? Write it down?
The old man chewed on it. He stroked the chicken. It sat there drowsily.
Even if all this is true, who'll publish something like that?
What difference does it make, who?
Well, how... people, how will they find out?
Grandad, what do you mean? Why does it have to be printed? Homer, the other Homer, the real one, he didn't write anything at all, did he? He was blind, he just spoke. Maybe he sang. And people listened to him.
The other Homer. Yes,
the old man agreed.
The real one,
he repeated with a bleak smile.
All right, I'll write it down, of course, but you need to see a doctor. What kind of way is that to talk, only a week left? And let's go. Will you take me to her?
Thanks, Granddad. I'll tell you more later in more detail when I find out. I'll dictate it if things work out.
Homer didn't talk as they walked. Something was ripening on his tongue, and he kept sucking at it, gritting his teeth in order not to let it go. Then he muttered something.
And you know what else? I had to publish a couple of short articles in their newspaper. They forced me. You know the kind of stuff about the breakthrough at Schiller.
But they forced you, Artyom said to him.
Yes, they forced me.
They got back, and everything there had changed. Dietrich and his comrade had finished eating and disappeared, and there was groaning coming from Sasha's little cubicle. She was quite all right.
This is it, said Artyom.
They exchanged glances. And they sat down to wait behind the curtain, each staring into his own glass. Homer squirmed and coughed. Artyom listened intently to himself. What was happening in there? The wind was howling inside him, turning the metal blades, creaking and transforming itself into power so that Artyom could spend a little more time on the earth. Where are you, white-bellied ships of the heavens? Where are you flying to on this wind? He gulped at his vodka. When he put the glass to his lips, a pink cloud spread out from the spot, and a cloud as murky as the hooch spread inside Artyom. Sleep weighed heavily on him. How long had he gone without sleep? 24 hours? The groaning came to an end. Some goon came out, buttoning himself up. He smiled like a conqueror. What could be done about this? Homer darted off, shuffling in that direction. He dropped the chicken.
Sasha! Homer? You?
Artyom didn't move. It wasn't his conversation. But he couldn't help hearing it.
My God! You here? Why are you, Sashenko?
I'm all right.
I thought you were dead. I looked for you there, at Tula.
I'm sorry.
Why didn't you tell me? Find me.
But how did you find me?
I... Artyom. Do you know him? He showed me.
Is he here?
You... Why are you doing this, Sasha? Why are you doing these foul things?
Why are they foul?
You shouldn't. You mustn't do this. Come on. You collect your things and we'll go.
Artyom stroked the barrel of the Nagant. Not right now. Tomorrow, or the next day, when Besolov came to see her. Let him answer. After that, by all means. All right. The chicken looked at him with its head on one side.
Where to? I'm not going anywhere.
What are you saying? When they hold you here like this, in slavery, we can... I'll ask.
No.
I don't understand. You can make a living from something else. If you have to be bought out, do you have to be bought out?
I'm not enslaved.
Then what is it I don't understand?
I'm in the right place for me. Why don't you tell me about yourself? How you are? How's... Hunter?
I don't know. Good God, what does that mean, in the right place?
I'm where people need me.
That's raving nonsense. You're not even 18 yet. What are you talking about? This is a brothel, a den of vice. All these filthy men. This can't go on. We're leaving.
No.
Come on.
Let go.
The chicken was listening, worrying about Homer. But Artyom didn't interfere. He didn't have any right to. And whose side should he take?
You mustn't do this. You have no right. You're not a prostitute.
As if that's the worst thing that can happen to a human being.
You're a poor little girl. I lost you. It's my fault.
It's not your fault. And you're not my father.
I'm not even. Why do you have to be here? It's not what you want.
Is that all? You thought I was dead. Here I am, alive. What's the difference if I'm a prostitute or not?
You're not a prostitute.
Then who am I?
A man stopped at the open door, with the shaved back of his head gathered into folds, and a leather jacket puckered across his shoulders. A security guard, checking if the master could come in. Artyom rubbed his eyes, leaned forward and looked right and left. Dark hair with a parting, bags under the eyes. Was there a man like that in the crowd?
You're not the kind of girl who lets herself for cartridges, who allows things to be done to her. That's not the way I remember you.
I see. And what if that's the way I am now?
No! This is disgusting!
Well, make me different in that book of yours. Make me the way you'd like me to be. What difference does it make what I do in real life? What difference does it make what happened to Hunter?
What has that got to do with this?
You finished your book. How? What happened at Tula?
I don't understand. A flood. The water broke in.
A miracle. Do you have a miracle in there?
That's not the final version.
Well, you corrected a slaughter to a miracle, so you can correct me. Make me a fairy. I'm sorry, it's time for my next visitor. I see them by appointment, like a doctor. Make me a doctor.
I won't leave.
The man with the folds on the back of his head listened to all this, spat and went away. Artyom went limp. He stroked Ryaba with his fingers. The chicken was dozing. The Nagant was wide awake. The painkillers and vodka spun the den of vice round. They spun the world round. They spun Artyom's insecurely attached head round. Homer eventually came out, looking lost as if he'd been doused with icy water and zapped with electric current.
Why is she acting that way?
You go. Go on, Granddad. Let me have a talk with her. Later. I'll see you later. Let's say in the same eating joint, where you and Ilya were. Give him my condolences.
Are you one of her?
Take a look at me. What could I do? I need to talk to her.
Take her away from here, Artyom. You're a good boy. Sincere. Take her away.
Sincere, all right.
He knocked. She'd already heard his voice and wasn't surprised to see him. He swayed inside.
Hi.
You're back. Did you get to your balashika?
Yes.
You look terrible. Sit down. Would you like anything? Water? Over here, this way.
She was amazingly clean, Sasha. Fresh, No dirt stuck to her. After she'd been mauled and torn to pieces, she just tidied her hair and bounced right back. How did she do that? How did women do that? Maybe they drank men. There are jammers in Balashika.
What jammers?
Sashenka. The man who you call your master. Besalov.
Wait. What's this you've got here? God, what terrible sores. And this? Your heart, you've got a fever.
Wait. Do you hear me? This Besalov, who is he?
You've got a pistol.
When will he come?
Poor thing. You've got worse, right?
Is he the pervert who used you that night? Who used me? Who watched us?
Who introduced us?
Listen, when will he come? I want to talk to him, I need to.
What for?
For a good reason. He's at the top of this pyramid, he calls all the shots here. He's got the Reds on a string. And the fascists. Miller. I want to understand, what's the point of it all? All of us being stuck in the metro, what's the plan? I want him to tell me.
Look, your scabs have dried up from the burn. Can I?
That? You said I burned myself.
Yes.
Why did I do that? What for?
You talked to him and burned yourself. To Alexei.
I did? I mean, because of the order? It was the order's motto that I burned off. Did he tell me something about the order? What it does nowadays?
Have you remembered?
So you knew everything too?
Artyom, do you want to lie down? You can hardly stay on your feet.
He squatted down by the wall.
Why didn't you explain to me? What did you send me off to Balashika for?
There's nothing you can do about it, Artyom. Sometimes all you can do is just burn yourself with a cigarette, that's all.
And about the jammers? And about the world?
Yes.
When will he come? When?
I don't know.
You do. You told me you can sense him. Tell me.
What do you want from him?
Hide me. Hide me, please. Hide me here.
I'll hide you.
She squatted down beside him, stroked his bare temples tenderly, and the top of his head.
Sit here behind the curtain.
She closed the curtain.
I can still do it. Everything can still be done.
He carried on looking at the fabric with its design of little flowers, and in the heart of every little flower he saw the eyeless back of someone's head, an entire meadow, flowering with the backs of heads. All the people from the Red Line were represented here, without faces, living only so that one day they would be shot in the back of the head. That was the pattern.
Why?
Artyom whispered stubbornly to himself, in order not to fall asleep.
Even if you are the master, even if you're the devil himself, you're going to tell me everything. Why you treat us like this? Why you treat people like this? Why we have to stay here? And if you don't tell me, I'll blow your brains out. With this Nagant here. Right between the eyes. You shit.
He carried on lulling himself like that. And fell asleep. Chapter 20 Miracles. And he died. He had always wondered if there was anything there, or if they simply turned out the lights, and if it was possible to make a deal with someone to go back to his childhood, to the time before the war, to his mother who was still alive, and an earth that was still alive. That would be a magnificent heaven. But the world after death hadn't turned out like that. The afterlife was the same way life had been, battened down tight, except maybe a bit cleaner, with freshly painted walls. If life was painted with linseed oil paint everywhere,
then heaven and hell had to be exactly the same as that. Apart from the walls, there was a bed, with more beds standing beside it, made up and empty. Strange. He couldn't be the only one who had died and come here. There was a metal rod, too, with a transparent bag full of some kind of liquid hanging on it. A rubber tube ran from the bag to Artyom's arm, replacing his blood with some kind of junk. Uh-huh. He was alive, therefore. He raised his arm and clenched and unclenched his fingers. The arm wasn't tied. He moved his legs. They were free. He threw back the sheet and looked at himself, stark naked. Bullet holes covered with plasters. White. Why had they done this to him? Who? He moved his back and didn't feel anything. The bite marks from the whip had healed up a bit. He looked at the cigarette burns. The scabs had come off, leaving pink blotches. What happened? He started remembering. There were flowers with the backs of heads. There was a conversation with Sasha. There was a revolver in his hand. How had they foisted a bed on him instead of all that and dripped a substitute into him to replace his blood? He lowered his feet onto the floor, then took hold of the rod as if it was a staff. Standing on his feet felt strange. His head was swimming, sounds twisted and bent. A square room, one door. Taking the staff with the false blood along, he hobbled on his stilts towards that door. He tugged on it. It was locked. He knocked. No answer. But out there, on the other side of the door, life was going on. He heard the sound of voices, filtered through plywood, music, laughter. Laughter. Maybe it was heaven out there after all. And he was in the antechamber. And he just had to get rid of all his corrupt blood, replace it with this colorless, angelic fluid, and they'd let him in. An iron maggot appeared in the keyhole and started turning. He had been heard. Artyom wondered what he could use to strike a blow, but he thought too long. Missed his chance. A woman was standing in the doorway, in a white coat, a neatly washed and ironed white coat, smiling at him.
"Well, there you are. And we were beginning to get worried."
"Worried?" Artyom asked cautiously. "You?"
"Of course. You were unconscious for so long."
"How long?"
"Oh, a week already. You're into the second week."
"At least I caught up on my sleep," said Artyom, trying to look over her shoulder and spot what was being prepared for him in the corridor. "I don't even know any longer what I'm going to do in the afterlife."
"Are you really in such a hurry?"
The woman shook her head. She was lovely. Pale freckles, copper eyes, hair gathered back, a smile. And he could see that she smiled often. Such a neatly delineated face.
"The doctor said a week or two, and I'd be moving on."
"Well, I'm a doctor, too, and I wouldn't have been so categorical."
"How would you have been?"
Another maggot stirred in Artyom's chest. Hope.
"Well, you received, in my view, a dose of 5 or 6 grays. When? About 2 weeks before you were hospitalized, judging from your blood."
"Before I was hospitalized?"
"If everything had been done more promptly, if we'd started the treatment immediately, I would have said that your chances were 50-50. And now, I wouldn't like to mislead you. The results of therapy are quite good. Transfusions. We managed to select the right antibiotics."
"Antibiotics? Therapy?"
Artyom narrowed his eyes.
"Well, and some other things. I think you can feel it for yourself. The sores are healing up. Anyway, it's nothing like a week. There's a good chance, a quite solid one, that you'll start to recover. Your body is responding well.
Where are the antibiotics from?
I beg your pardon? If you're concerned about the expiration date, I assure you...
Where am I? What is this? Is this Hansa?
Hansa? The Hansa outside here, the circle line, you mean?
Outside? Outside what?
Where are you going? Stop. You have no trousers, by the way.
He jostled her aside and squirmed his way out of the room. The corridor ran off, immensely long and strange-looking, as if it had been built inside a tunnel. One wall was rounded, covered in tunnel liners, but not tunnel liners like the ones in the metro, eaten away by rust. These were clean and covered in heavenly linseed oil paint. Everything clean and dry. Long-life light bulbs dangling down. What sort of place was this? Not a station. There weren't any stations like this. A little orchestra started playing somewhere, merrily and drunkenly.
Where are we?
It will seem rather strange if you set out to explore everything here with a bare backside, Artyom. I suggest you go back to the ward.
How do you know my name?
It's written on your card.
On my card?
And then he remembered. He remembered how 2 years ago he sat in one of the fascists' cages, waiting to be hanged early in the morning. He simply couldn't get to sleep. And when he did fall asleep for a few minutes, his sneaky, pitiful brain fed him a dream of escape. Hunter appeared, exterminated all Artyom's enemies, and freed him. It was a pretty good dream. The lousy part was having to wake up. Artyom raised his hands and looked at them again. He wanted like hell to believe in this. The odds and the chance and the recovery. He thought he had already come to terms with death, but no. The moment he was promised another little bit of life, enticed, he fell for it. But if it was a dream, then he didn't need any pants. He started walking forward towards the voices. At one spot, the wall suddenly disappeared to reveal a large space with a distant ceiling. Here he could see how everything was built, like a tunnel, but a gigantic tunnel so high that it could be divided into three human-sized levels. And running up from the first of these levels was a broad formal stairway covered with red carpet runners. Hanging above the stairway was a globe, an incredible globe, with little square mirrors glued all over it.